everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is the Red, White, and Rude, where politics is downstream of culture, and I bring it all to you. We've got a great show tonight for you, my friends. We are going to talk Assassin's Creed Shadows, a woke misfire met with deluded defenders. That's right. Assassin's Creed has been released, and it's an ongoing cultural war on social media with the woke gamers who do not want indoctrination battling back the half-truths coming out of Ubisoft and the industry rags, as we call magazines. Then we're going to talk about Snow White and the box office receipts. Boy, do they dwarf the average receipt, or rather don't meet expectations, I guess. And we're going to give you an update on Captain America, Brave New World, how he's going or how it's going to see if the movie can break even. And then we are going to close it out with our ever-growing popular The Rude Rundown. Do not forget, before I go on, to bookmark grumblingsmedia.com, where you can find this podcast and all our other podcast clips and written work. And you can also find this podcast and the rest of them at YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, ePandora, under the handle Grumblings Media. So let's get down to it. Assassin's Creed launch March 20th, 2025. There were a couple of delays. It was originally planned for November 15th and then February 14th. And then I think it may have even had a week delay or something to that effect. However, the bottom line is it is out. Excuse me. This is Ubisoft's 14th major Assassin's Creed title. It's set in feudal Japan with Yasuke and Naoi, marking the series' first Japanese setting. However, what makes it different? Every protagonist in the previous settings were native to the setting. So, for example, the one in America had a Brit and an American Indian. I guess Native American, to be politically correct. The one in Italy had an Italian, Greece, Greek, Egypt, Egyptian. The Valhalla one had a Nordic character. So you get the gist of these. The one in the UK had a British guy. So you get the gist. Now, the one in Japan had a black guy who they claimed was a samurai, but history shows he was far from it. Then they try to tell us, yes, he is. Don't argue with us, Ubisoft. We hired non-Japanese women who are woke to tell us what the history is. And they screwed it all up. Everything from the scenery in there to the actual history to the weaponry. If you're going to get historical accuracy, you may want to hire English-speaking Japanese who live in Japan and are familiar or specialized in Japanese history. Not a bunch of woke DEI hires because they're women who happen to say they know history and they don't. So let's look at the initial performance snapshot. As I said, it was released approximately just a handful of days ago. So it did reach 2 million players across platforms. That came out yesterday, and it doubled from 1 million on launch day. The Steam peak concurrent players hit 64,800. So it was a top 30. Remember, this is a quadruple A. I saw that somewhere, a triple A game. Saw somebody say it's a quadruple A game. So, but those are numbers being given, the 2 million, from Ubisoft themselves. How they derived those numbers, we don't know. It did estimate the drop 1.5 million copies sold, and that is per analyst Daniel Ahmad, and that covered physical and digital sales, excluding subscriptions. And subscriptions don't really matter because you're playing a bunch of games, so you can't really generate or dictate how many sales would have been made by that. So the 1.5 million sales by day three, that does fall short of Ubisoft's hopes for their trajectory, targeting Odyssey's 10 million lifetime sales. It's not a good starting point. They needed a stronger opening to hit the 5 million to 7 million break-even point. And that comes from a website I found called TipRanks. Very good site from what I read about it so far. So who's making Assassin's Creed? Well, it's Ubisoft. you know, and to give you an idea about them, their stock has been down about 85% over the past 4 years, from $104.50 in 2021 all the way down to $14.30. And they had debts of over $1.5 $4 billion, and that's according to Bounty in the comics. They've had their recent titles, Star Wars Outlaws and Skull and Bones, massively underperformed. Star Wars Outlaws is probably going to be a loss for them at Skull and Bones. They missed their sales targeting in both of those. And they're facing shareholder demands for a leadership change. The cost for the CEO, Guillermo, I don't know how to say, Guillermo, they're saying, get out of here. He's one of the two brothers that founded the company. And they are in buyout talks with Tencent to stabilize the finances. When you go public, you kind of lose control of your game, especially as you get more and more investors. So there's financial and there's operational turmoils. So that means Shadow is a considerable and a critical test for Ubisoft's survival with their current regime after string after string after string of financially devastating missteps. All right, so their target seems to be Odyssey's lifetime sales of 10 million copies. They're probably not even going to hit 5 million to 7 million, according to some reports. You know, so again, the game was delayed twice. It was delayed probably to clean it up. So despite those delays, they called it one of our strongest launches. And they are projecting profitability based on early player numbers. They can project whatever the hell they want. This is more marketing. This is what you call coach speak. So your player's playing like a bum coach, you know. So what do you think? Well, you know, he's giving it all. His all. We expect him to improve by this week. We're doing this. We're doing that. And he's showing us signs of improvement. It's all hogwash. Yeah. So that's how you can look at that comment. But again, they're hoping to replicate Valhalla's 1 billion plus in revenue, not profit, but revenue to offset all of these costly losses. It's not a matter of offsetting the losses as much as it's a matter of trying to stop the bleeding and turn the ship towards a path to success in terms of Ubisoft, the company. So again, 2 million players surpassing Odyssey's estimated 450,000 launch day. Now, Odyssey came out years and years ago. So, you know, you can't really compare those games from years ago to today's game. So the Steam peak was 64,800. Odyssey was 62,000. Now, again, Odyssey came out years ago. I should clarify that. When I say years ago, 2018. What's that, 7 years ago? That's a while ago. And the numbers here, 65,000 compared to Odyssey, 62,000. That's not a good sign. You know, they may say it's exceeding the initial expectations for a franchise installment, but I don't know. You know, and they're talking about it has cross-platform appeal, what every Assassin's Creed did. Here's a real test. Ubisoft has refused to release initial sales numbers. And unlike past high sellers like Valhalla, where sales were quickly touted, this reliance on 2 million players, and that's obviously inflated by Ubisoft and their subscription service, instead of talking about units sold or dollars earned, that raises a massive red flag. And here's the other kicker, too. I just saw a post where somebody was promoting Ubisoft Plus. You can sign up for $15, play the game for a month, then unsubscribe. Sadly, that's a common tactic with many gamers. In my subscription service, we issue no refunds after 1 week, meaning the moment they use a subscription service for their first series of games for information, they were locked in. No refunds allowed, you know, because these people, they'll have a game they want information on, they'll pay, then they'll cancel it, you know. So sadly, it's a common tactic. Today's generations have no respect for business. It's all about selfishness in themselves. I'm sorry, I hate to say that, but for a lot of them, it is. Now, these Steam numbers, it lags behind Dragon Age of Veilguard, 90,000 at its peak, top 20, and Ghost of Tsushima, 77,000. Both are AAA benchmarks. In other words, they can compare themselves to that. You know, again, 6,500, 90,000, and even Red Dead Redemption 2, which came out years ago, too, 60,000. Marvel Rivals, 50,000. So when they tout at marketing, they're going to say, hey, look, man, we're on par. But you got to look with the cost of the game today, and we're going to get to that, with how much they put into the cost of marketing, et cetera, and today's bigger numbers in terms needed. So despite a solid launch, Shadow falls short of top-tier competition, which raises questions about its AAA staying power. So there were even some PR and technical missteps. I'm not going to go through all of that. I'd be here all night. But the weak storytelling has been criticized despite delays for polishing it. They canceled the collector statue. It was deemed insensitive and apologized for using historical imagery without permission in marketing. These guys are idiots over there. And supposedly they have an overbloated team. Their credits runs for 2 hours. Oh my God, 2 hours of credits. I mean, how overbloated can you get? So they struggled to balance quality control with culture sensitivity. And that obviously has impacted how they are perceived at launch. They're perceived like idiots, to be quite frank, with no culture sensitivity. And the problem here, I'm a Latino, a lot of friends who are black. I grew up in the South, and we talk about this. Everything that's culturally sensitive seems to, you can't screw up with certain cultures, but I'll be damned if Asians don't get tossed under the bus. I have heard minority leftists and Democrats call them the other white meat, sarcastically to me. So what is the financial performance? So estimated costs are at $250 to $350 million. And that does not count marketing because it's a quadruple A, according to some people, with next-gen tech and dual protagonists. So a lot of extra work, $250 to $350 million. Hollywood movies aren't even made for that much. Now, this underscores their investment and how critical this is to the current regime's survival. This is them saying this is our best, the best of the best we got, folks. So $1.5 million in sales. Oh, and let me give credit to TipRanks. That's where I got this, TipRanks.com, I would imagine. Let me double check that for you people real quick. That is correct. It is TipRanks.com. I want to give proper credit here because usually I do this research myself and I look it over. But I had some issues that came up outside of my power here. So I had to rely on TipRanks here. For Dragon Age, the Veilguard, I created all those numbers myself with the help of other sites, but I crunched them, double-checked them. So TipRanks here estimates it $250, $350 million again. The high budget, again, underscores Ubisoft's dependence on this being a hit for their current regime to survive. 1.5 million sales at $70 a pop equals 105 million gross. That excludes $280 Ultimate Edition and Battle Pass, which are microtransactions. So the early sales provide a start, but we need additional revenue streams to truly understand where this game is headed. With net revenue per unit is going to be about $49 or $50 a pop. You know, they got to share. See, people are like, oh, it's $70 a pop. Well, no, they have to share that with the place that's selling that, with the distributor, etc. That's about $20, $21. So because of this, it's going to need 5 to 7 million in sales to cover $250 to $350 million dollar development cost. That's the cost to make the game. And that's at $49 net per unit. And that's after 30% platform fees. Again, that's where they sell it at. And that move goes up to 8 to 10 million. They need 8 to 10 million in sales if you add in 100 to the 140 million in marketing. I don't think it's going to hit it. I don't think it's going to come close to hitting it. It needs strong legs, and I'm already seeing it not have strong legs. What I see is artificial inflated legs, kind of like what we saw for Snow White. I'll talk about that later. Every place that they had paid for advertising that was magazine-driven or website-driven gave it rave reviews. One even went so far as said Gal Gadot stunk. Zegler was great, and then goes on to say Gal Gadot starts calling her names because she's Israeli. She's Jewish. I mean, so that's how bad that got. I'm going to talk about that in a bit. I'm digressing, but same concept here. The gaming magazines, the gaming websites that are corporate-owned, they all gave it rave reviews, and ironically, most if not all of them have advertising. So Ubisoft's recovery. Again, let me repeat this. It's worth repeating. 5 to 7 million in sales to cover 250 to 350 million developmental costs. And that's at $49 per unit. Now, they need 8 to 10 million in sales if you add in the marketing cost of 100 to 140 million. So you are looking at, oh my gosh, 350 million to 500 million in cost for this game. Wow, that's truly putting your company on the line. I don't think they're going to hit it. Again, Ubisoft's recovery hinges on Shadows evolving into a revenue juggernaut. Not just a hit, not just breaking even, but a revenue juggernaut. 7 to 10 million is a critical milestone. That's a big number. I get it, but obviously they're still waiting for data to come in. Does it have legs with word of mouth? Right now, I don't see it happening. Currently, traditional gaming magazines are loving it, but gaming influencers, and this is key, because they dwarf now the magazines in terms of actual influence. I mean, you see some of these gaming streamers, 30 million across their platforms. That's just one. So the game's reception, gaming magazine, IGN, 8 of 10. PC gamers praise the inclusivity, meaning the wokeness of it. Open Critic had an average of 81. Most of them see it as a technical leap for the series, technology-wise, but the storytelling remains weak. So in essence, they're trying to give it a positive. Oh, graphics are great. The downside is graphics are so good overall, people aren't buying games for the graphics like we used to. I remember graphics really upped it. Like, oh my God, that's the early battles of the Xbox, you know, the PS3 and the PS5, you know, those are big leaps. Now they're incremental leaps. I mean, there is quality, but not enough for somebody to go, okay, I got to get that. Player sentiment. So here's what we have. The PS5 rating of 4.76 from 5 from thousands of users. Steam, very positive. But early on, they were very negative. Social media in general show 60% positive mentions. It's up from a very, very mixed launch. So one side, the Ubisoft side, is going to look at this with broad appeal. They're overcoming the initial backlash because of the culture debate. Conservatives versus the woke. But here's what you're missing. 1.5 million in sales. That misses Ubisoft's blockbuster juggernaut trajectory. So when I read this, I'm like, okay, well, what we have here is dual bombing. Initial negative review bombs over wokeness offset by high positive bombs to hit very positive and to fight back against the anti-wokeness. So this masks a true reception until sales and playtime data reveal whether it's hype. Like Dragon Age the Veilguard, it faded post-launch. Great sales, we're happy, happy. At the end of the day, a few months later, when they're giving their report, the quarterly report, we learned that even they deemed it a failure. So I am actually going to talk about this game probably next week from a gameplay perspective. I'm going to bring on somebody who's actually played it, and we're going to probably talk very little on the politics, but just the gameplay. But for right now, you can play as either Yasuke or Naoe. And there's key missions, one called Lost Honor, which is Yasuke, samurai origin, which is probably the lie they've been promulgating, versus the actual truth, which they tried to say their lie was the actual truth, which became a big issue, not just here, but in Japan. And then there's the Wheel Unmasked, Naoe's conspiracy reveal. So these quests anchor the historical fiction. Now, that's it. They went from saying, no, this is historical, to, oh, what's your problem? It's historical fiction. Which is what they should have said all along. So let me talk about the side quests, the romance options. Yasuke, the wheel turns, putting down the roots, or more like laying down for the Hershey Road. Naoe, stolen hearts. Meaning girl-on-girl loving hearts. So they made those optional. And that's how Odyssey's player choice focus was. Off-quested scenes, including the gay options. They're all fully skippable. But here's the kicker. What I've been told is that you have to turn these off. They're automatically on. So that in and of itself shows they're promoting it. They're pushing it. If you want truly optional, you say at the beginning, do you want to play these scenes and be forewarned there are gay and lesbian scenes? Why? Because kids are playing this. Kids as young as 8. Don't believe me? Go on Reddit. Go on social media. So I think this probably stems from Ubisoft adjusting the game post-backlash, outrage over the forced LGBT content. They learned from EA's Dragon Age of Veilguard. Don't force it. But they still try to get over on you by you have to go in there and turn it off. So they want to have their cake and eat it too, but gamers are too smart. If anything, the conservative gaming world fights like the Democrat political world in the pushback, in the outrage, in the cancellation. And with games costing $70, with GT6 possibly going up to $100, people are not buying these games because there's 10 zillion others you can buy. So the romance offers no mechanical benefits, and the split reflects Ubisoft's balance and narrative freedom, so they say. It's more like it was forced. So what's some of the gameplay feedback? Stealth praise, now always stealth lauded as a series best with dynamic lighting and pro mechanics. Yasuke's combat is fun, but it's real. So there were complaints when Resident Evil had a white guy in Africa killing all blacks. There were actual black groups, nonprofit groups, demanding they change that, demanding they remove the game, etc. But when the Japanese brought it up, these same groups, these same factions were like, what's the big deal? You see the hypocrisy? My take is, you want to play that game, you got to be even keel across the board. So the Japanese are complaining, you better listen to them. So there's a critique on the RPG skill trees and dialogue choices as being shallow, cosplaying an RPG, and there's a lot of repetitive content. That's kind of typical for an Assassin's Creed game. It's the same moves, same thing, same battles, just different scenes and different setups. But that's common. That doesn't bother me. But what does bother me is they make these games so big. What suffers are the shallow dialogue and the quests being simplified. I thought Black Flag was one of their best done. I didn't really see that in those. So there's bugs like long load times and UI lag after 60 to 90 minutes. Though it does seem to be polished. I saw how you can, if you crouch, kind of like in stealth mode, you know, you can beat the bad guys. So they need to really fix that bug. So what are the cultural controversies? I've been talking about some of them. Well, IGN and Forbes praise the diversity as a strength, dismissing all those woke people that don't know what they talk about. They're racist, bigots, etc., etc. Ubisoft defends Yasuke's historical basis. We spent millions of dollars to tell you this fake history we created is the truth. And if you disagree, you are racist. That's kind of what they did. They defend their LGBT romances as progressive choices. So these fused frame shadows from the woke side, this is a bold step toward inclusivity, appealing to a modern gaming audience. Man, the numbers are so low. What it is that everybody's woke on that they're trying to appease. And I saw this years and years and decades ago. I saw the wokeism coming in. To me, I looked at the quality of the game. Now the games are so woke. To me, it started with Far Cry. I can't remember the Far Cry where it was like a military compound. That's when I started, Sorry, Far Cry, you lost me. And ever since then, if a game is woke, I just move on. Like, I have a library of over 400 games, and I've only played about 1% to 2% of them. So I've got plenty of games to choose from. My favorite game is State of Decay 2, which is a woke company who got burned by their own wokeness. It's hilarious. You can't make it up. But they seem to be good guys there. But State of Decay 2 is one of the greatest games played in terms from a business perspective, how they treated the fans, and just the gameplay. Who would ever thought in their open world gameplay, you could do the same missions, the same game over and over and over, yet it's different every single time. Who thought killing zombies would be so fun? Anyway, I digress. But anyway, the woke crowd does view this as a tool to promote and indoctrinate kids into a sexuality they neither know about nor should at that age. Again, you have preteens, 7, 8, 9-year-olds playing this game. That's a topic best left to parents or reserved for late teens and once they become young adults. And they can have the conversation. But that is a parent's job. Instead, the left, the progressive, the Democrats, they're using gaming to push their agenda. Now, what's the anti-woke my side? the conservative side? Well, it's a woke agenda. And it prioritizes their ideology, their belief system, over quality gameplay. And that gives you a reason why they're not saying how many sales of the game versus how many players, and not telling you how the players are encompassed. Again, you go to Ubisoft, sign up $15, you can play the game, and then unsubscribe. I know a lot of people who do that for the NFL games, whether it's Netflix, mostly Peacock. And here's our issue. Our issue is it's not gaming's job to indoctrinate or promote sexuality, especially gay and lesbian. Why? Well, heterosexuality is how our species promulgates, how we move forward, how we grow, how we continue to exist. That is what's normal. Am I saying that others are abnormal? No. I'm saying that's not normal, meaning we're all wired differently. But if we were all wired to be gay or lesbian, we would die as a species. So they don't even really push heterosexual. And even then, I don't want them to. I don't want them to. I just want great gameplay. But they want to push agendas unfit for kids and outside of parental control. They say, oh, no, parents have control. Well, how many parents do you know actually watch and monitor? A handful compared to how many don't. I would advocate for just have romance. Your traditional male-female romance. There doesn't need to be any sexuality. Like Snow White, which I'm going to talk about, which they did away with this current real live action movie, and it's bombing. You don't need explicit sexuality, and Dragon Age: The Veilguard put that in. These are just weirdos. You know, we're going to have two species we create, one male, one female, or two female making love there in front of so an 8-year-old kid can watch it. Ooh. Gaming should entertain, not educate anything on sexuality, because you're not educating, you are indoctrinating. That includes gay and lesbian options, and as well as heterosexuality. They don't need to be showing and creating sex scenes in games. And they had those. They had a heavy, nasty-ass kissing there. Yasuke with Ronin, Naoi with Katsushime. While downplaying heterosexual norms. This completely takes away from what a game should be doing. This is not human sexuality 101 in high school. And even then, they're trying to teach that stuff in grade school. Why? About indoctrinating. Sexuality discussions belong to parents, not developer. Games like Shadow, they mirror schools overstepping into indoctrination. And they're risking exposure to kids too young for those type of themes. And they know it. We conservatives, we are open to diverse ideas. We don't care if you're gay, if you're lesbian, if you're transgender, in the proper context. We don't need boys and girls sports. I feel like a woman today. Let me go compete and become AAA, the hurdles champion, the 50-meter dash champion, this champ. I just saw somebody beat all the girls by 7 seconds, and it was like the 400, it's one of like quarter-mile type or races or half-mile races. And 7 seconds in that context, that's like a mile apart. You couldn't even see the next runner. And it was a kid. And in comparison, a lot of these, when they compete as boys, they're losers. Leah Thomas, I forget his real name, he's still sporting a penis. And he became a national champion. He was ranked like 450th in the men. So you see how that works? So we don't care in the proper context. We care when it's taken out of context, which in gaming, that's the case. Gaming is often for kids, and that's not the setting. Romance is fine, but explicit sexuality, gay or otherwise, should be removed. And I sound like a prude, but I'm not. But I just know there's a right place and a right time. Example, it starts there and it keeps going. They were encouraging families to bring your kids to the gay pride parades. The one in San Francisco last year had men giving each other fellatio and then urinating on one another. True story. It's on video. You can go on social media and see it. Disgusting. Then there's specific grievances. There's a shrine destruction that sparked outrage. I guess in Japan, you don't mess with that type of stuff as you do in America. Anti-woke posts dropped from 70% to 40%, suggesting fading momentum. with some of these grievances. I don't buy that at all. I don't buy that. And that was done by an analysis by a woke group. As a conservative in this battle, gaming conservatives have learned not to let up, and they won't, as Ubisoft and EA both learned the hard way with Star Wars Outlaws and Dragon Age of Veilguard, and Ubisoft has just a whole trail of failures because of that, and EA has its share too. And these grievances, they do reflect cultural sensitivity clashes and conspiracy-driven criticism from the woke. They make us sound like we're all conspiracy theorists. We're not. We're just living in Reelsville. So, on top of that, there's no historical evidence, fake or real, for Yasuke's sexuality. Naoi's fictional, so they can do whatever they want. But so they're trying to portray a strong black man, and he's on the down low. See, in some Japanese, they see this is a Western imposition. They're shoving their crap down our culture. This became a national debate. And this is why the woke are losing. They're going too far. They thought they owned it. Trump threw a big wrench. Even the Japanese government responded. Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba, he warned of copycat shrine attacks, called it an insult to the nation. Politician Hiroyuki Kada critiques Ubisoft for not seeking permission. They're okay, working with the government. Hey, we want to do this. We just want to make sure we don't step on toes. That's not uncommon. Maybe not with the government, with certain groups. They say they did, but they didn't. They hired a bunch of woke women who claim to be historians to do all this, and they failed. This was a rare political intervention in gaming, and it's not good for Ubisoft because now they are on politicians' radar. So what did Ubisoft do? Hey, they reacted as they should. Day one patch removed the shrine violence. This swift change reflects Ubisoft's attempt to mitigate escalating issue and controversy with a game that will hurt sales. Period. End of story. They say there's potential legal implications. Even nothing's confirmed, though. But the government does not mess around. They could just shut down Ubisoft and throw that game out and the company out of Japan. And then what all started this, obviously, was Yasuke's role. He's a samurai. No, he's not. So Ubisoft got so angry about this that nothing was going their way. Their woke battles were being lost to the conservative gaming influence. And it's not that they're conservative. Let's get that straight. It's they don't want this crap in games. So what do? Anybody who talks to our developer, okay, they call it harassment. But harassment is determined, is in the eye of the beholder. And let me tell you a secret. So for Avowed, the developers were coming out chastising. And this is a common trait with Star Wars Outlaws and with Assassin's Creed. Screw you. We don't need you. Go away. Blah, 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 blah. Then we don't buy the game or we push back. It's harassment, man. So Ubisoft, I think they're not going to hire it. Their shareholders will probably tell them, sit your booty down. You ain't going to do crap. We're going to ride this out. And we're going to start taking people with lawsuits. The moment one developer crosses the line, which they will, everything changes. They did this to try to mitigate the intense online backlash they know they were going to get and did get. Developers faced harassment, but they did not. They faced pushback from those they were harassing. So, let's close this out. 2 million players per Ubisoft. They don't tell us what the sales numbers are. 1.5 million, well, I'm lying, 1.5 million. So this came from not Ubisoft, but an analyst who says it's about, he through his number crunching, figured out possibly 1.5 million sold. Steam peak, 65,000 is not great for a AAA game of that stature. Ubisoft's financial recovery is dependent on sustaining this game in terms of having legs well beyond the launch. This is a massively high-stakes gamble in a very divisive market. A high-stakes gamble Ubisoft should not even be having. But because of their own ignorance, their own arrogance, their own want to go woke, to shove it down our throats, to tell us, we don't care. You don't like it, don't buy it. And when we didn't, they freaked out. And now they're at the precipice of going through regime change. This fallout will reshape how studios approach historical settings in global games. That is for sure. At the end of the day, I do not think Ubisoft will hit its numbers. I think this game will go down in shame, and there will be fallout. What kind of fallout? We're going to have to wait and see. But I predict it could result in the sale of the company, and the resignation or forcing out of the Guillemot brothers through scaling back of how much they put into their games, through the layoffs of hundreds, and the scaling back and adopting a more conservative approach to gaming, which isn't a conservative approach. Just build a great game that that deals with gaming. Let's move on. Snow White slaughtered. Rachel Zegler's woke fiasco buries Disney's classic. Okay, so Snow White had a disastrous opening. After years of bad PR, from Rachel Zegler, who I am told is quite talented, combined with the negative feedback on the CGI dwarves, Snow White's official box office numbers are worse than expected. If I remember correctly, they were thinking of about a $50, $60 million projection. So, $55 million. They estimated, predicted around a $55 million domestic opening. It's now down to $45 million after the number, early numbers. It's a global flop. This is a German fairy tale. It should have great numbers in Europe. Despite predictions of $100 million plus global opening, international markets severely underperform, nearly matching domestic totals. Wow, it's a 50% loss in expectations. It launched in all major markets at once. There was no additional international releases planned to boost its performance. Sometimes, in other words, at times they stagger out the international release. In this case, it looks like they did not. So let's talk about the box office multiplier. Typically, films earn 30% of their total box office during the global opening. Almost a third of the money. So you use the 3-time multiplier. So this is all projecting Snow White to reach about $261 million worldwide. This had a production budget of at least $270 million, possibly higher. The film is currently $363 million in the red and could lose over $200 million overall. Let me get some credit here. Geeks and Gamers had all these numbers, and I found it across various sites, but they had it all in a nice compact write-up. So again, a production cost of at least $270 million, possibly even likely higher with all the reshoots. The film's currently at $363 million in the red and could lose over $200 million overall. So what's the break-even point? Let's take the $270 million budget. The break-even ranges from $675 to $810 million. If it costs $300 million to make, it could be $1 billion. It's just not unattainable. So this falls in line with their previous movie I'm going to talk about in a minute, Captain America, Braveheart, or whatever the hell it's called, okay, the new one. So no matter how they try to spin this, this is a financial disaster for Disney. Is there a potential upside? Walk-up traffic and mom and daughter audiences may extend its run, though not likely. Critical reception, critic-less, with 46 votes, shows Snow White scores a heinous, is what Geeks and Gamers say. Heinous, 11%. I love Geeks and Gamers. It's a good site, geeksandgamers.com. Check it out. So there's comparison to Mufasa. But unlike Mufasa the Lion King, that recovered from a poor opening and it earned $700 million. In other words, it had strong legs. Snow White lacks that audience, specifically the audience goodwill. And it opened far lower domestically. Their social media backlash towards Snow White. Early social media posts show fans mocking the CGI dwarves, Zegler's comments. She's really an anti-Semite. Rachel Zegler is an anti-Semite. And I don't say that based off of conjecture. I say that based off of her posts. Snow White flop. That's trending right now on X. So it's just widespread rejection. And mom-daughter audience may be staying away. There's other movies to go see. And it's a darker tone in this movie. So, I mean, they have flops like Strange World, $147 million versus $180 million budget. Meaning $147 million revenue, $180 million to make it. So, this is just one of many more underperforming remakes. The Lion King, 2019, $1.6 billion. That has worldwide appeal, though. That was like an outlier. That's like what you call, you know, the unicorn. They call companies that are like that the unicorn. This movie was that, the unicorn. One would think this would push Disney to rethink remakes, but it won't. Disney's creativity is gone. If it's not an MCU movie, it's a remake of something. What it will do, though, is lower their budgets. I mean, Star Wars is going through the same thing. And it's all based off woke-driven agendas by the people in charge of these studios, meaning the various divisions, the Star Wars division, the Disney division, the Pixar division. So it was number one at $43 million. So let's talk about, and there's your take. It's not going to make its money. I gave a long take on it last week. Check it out. Great podcast, Red, White, and Root, episode 40. So this week opened up at $43 million. It's a weak opening. Let's move on, because I want to talk about Captain America Brave New World. 33% drop, 6 overall this weekend. That's not good. So Captain America Brave New World just edged out Black Widow domestically, and they're claiming that as a big win. But it only has a $401 million worldwide haul. It tells a tale of inflated budgets and fading Marvel Comics universe or Marvel Cinematic Universe glory. It's not that. It's just bad writing. The superhero genre is not dead. It's just piss poor anti-American writing. And when I say anti-American, it's Rachel Zegler. I forget the name of this story. Anthony Mackie. You know, Captain America doesn't quite represent America. Really? It's in the name, Captain America, you moron. And Anthony Mackie's is as woke as they come, but he wants his kids to be strong black men. As any father wants their kid to be a strong Latino, strong white guy, strong Asian. Yeah, I said white guy too. Whites are the only ones that every race can be racist against while they promote their own racism. And that's what we've seen with Anthony Mackie at times. Anti-America, my booty. In essence, though, they're hiding the fact that these milestones are just spins because the movie's struggling to justify its cost. It's not making it. It's a success. It passed Black Widow. Really? Black Widow. All right. So, it's grossed $185 million domestically. It pales when adjusted for inflation and ticket price increases compared to early Marvel Comics Universe entries like Thor, $181 million in 2011. Ant-Man, $180 million in 2015. You adjust those for inflation, you're going to blow past that $185 million of Captain America, Brave New World. Those movies drew larger audiences and lower ticket costs. Obviously, declining Marvel brand appeal because of the wokeism. Black Widow, that they're saying, oh, just passed Black Widow. It was released in 2021 during the pandemic. And if I'm correct, it went to Disney Plus, simultaneous Disney Plus premiere. So, in essence, it outperformed Brave New World when adjusted for inflation, factoring the fact that it was on Disney Plus, factoring the fact that Brave New World was not. So, again, this is PR marketing. There's a term, damage control marketing. It's creating a narrative that's not true. So, what's the current total for Cap? Cap Brave New World has grossed approximately $401 million worldwide. So let's go into the three-time break-even formula. So I've seen numbers from 180 to 280 million. So let's do so the break-even point. So assuming 100 million marketing, so it goes from 180 to 280. And that's a standard Marvel Comics Universe number. Total costs are 280 million for the low end of what this movie costs. So that means it needs 840 million to break even. It's going to fall about 440 million short. Not going to make his money back. So let's look at the numbers I discovered, 250 to 280 million. I researched the hell out of these. 100 million in marketing, you're 350 to 380 million. That rule is going to need about a 1 billion to break even. It's about 650 to 740 million short. So whether its budget was 180 million or the hefty 250 to 280 million, Brave New World needs 840 million to 1.4 billion to break even. It's nowhere near a hitting. This is an abysmal flaw. They will likely take a write-off. We'll hear about that write-off months down the road. Now, there was a point when anything Marvel Comics Universe was a massive hit. The Infinity Wars, the final movie with that, that was the end of that. Then they went full woke. Again. A Marvel Comics Universe disaster. Oh, I'm sorry, Marvel Cinematics Universe disaster. All right, let's get down to what I love, the Rude Rundown. Rude Rundown is when I take a look at what's happening around the nation, at times the world, all things pop culture, entertainment, music related, and if it interacts or intersects with politics, I make sure to bring that up. The Rude Rundown, number one. Backlash against Jimmy Kimmel and ABC over Tesla arson comments. So Jimmy Kimmel, obviously, is the host of the very lowly rated late night show. He sparked controversy again with remarks that critics claim downplayed or excused recent arson attacks. And it did. That was his whole point. On Tesla. Attacks on Tesla. Obviously, there was backlash. He was being sarcastic. And he mocked Tesla's stock decline and vandalism incidents. Wink, wink, yeah, I'm not again for that. Wink, wink. Saying, please don't vandalize. I don't know if he did that. I didn't watch it. Don't ever vandalize. With a smirk. See, that was with a smirk. And that's my version of the wink, wink. And he was encouraging violence is what he was doing. And look, who owns ABC? Disney. They're going to have them. One day, it's just going to implode on them. It's going to just implode on them. And I look forward to seeing that. But there's backlash. He came out later. I didn't mean to get violence. Why the pushbacks? Man, Disney said, boy, get your butt in front of that camera and say that. I don't want to. You're going to want to. See, Jimmy Kimmel a few weeks ago said, I don't care about my ratings. It's about being against Trump. Anything and everything against Trump. That's what he said. I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he said in the interview. He doesn't care about ratings. It's all about hating on Trump and getting the media, I'm sorry, the America to hate on him. And he's going to pay a price for that karmically one day. But after this, he's probably done. After this, he's in his final year. He's probably done. The rundown number two, Ryan Reynolds versus Justin Baldoni. The nice pool controversy, sourcepeople.com. The first one, I apologize. I don't remember what that source was. I want to say Geeks and Gamers, maybe. I can't remember. I apologize. The Ryan Reynolds one was People.com. So there's a legal feud, obviously, between Ryan Reynolds and his wife, his lesser half, Blake Lively, against Justin Baldoni. It's escalated. Baldoni alleges that Reynolds used a nice pool character in Deadpool and Wolverine to mock him. And he did. It's any moron can see that and go, yeah, he did. And he wants to dismiss his $400 million lawsuit. He claims, Baldoni's lawsuit claims Reynolds and his wife Lively have orchestrated a smear campaign, and they have, in my opinion, allegedly, I guess, against him. And they point out nice post male feminist persona and a deleted scene about monetizing the woman's movement as evidence as targeted ridicule. And Reynolds' legal team argues that this is projected satire and not legally actionable. If they're not using it as legally actionable, they're using it to build up and timeline and show in step how they smeared him. And that is part of the smear. They don't care the fact that they used it. They care about why they used it. Lively's the predator here, along with Reynolds, who's helping her, in my opinion, allegedly. We'll see how this plays out in court. But that's your latest update on the Justin Baldoni versus Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds bullyism. Rundown number three, Hollywood's AI plea to Trump. Now, these are AI plea. Actors, source, geeksandgamers.com. So Hollywood celebrities, once vocal critics and still generating vile hate at and towards Donald Trump. Actually, that's one of the same attitudes. They're not turning to him. Please, please protect us from AI companies. Oh, they're exploiting our copyrighted work. If that was true, well, they are. They're not exploiting it as they want you to believe, but they're using it and not having to pay for it. And that's what's pissing them off. And they know what's coming. So over 400 stars, including Kate Blanchett, who hates him, Ben Stiller, who just came out a couple weeks ago hating him, they signed an open letter urging Trump to resist tech giants like OpenAI and Google, and they who seek to use copyrighted material without permission to train AI. And they do. But when it's done on the back end and they're not showing it publicly, that's legal. And they say that it's threatening the 229 billion arts industry. Here's the problem with actors. Their wokeness is going to doom them. Eventually, one day, it's going to be years from now, but one day, they're going to be able to generate AI that's going to be just as real as a human. You won't even be able to tell the difference. And that's going to be how movies are made. It's cheap. They don't have to pay a dime. I can imagine AI actors, meaning an actor that is nothing but CGI, created by AI, that looks so realistic, they'll develop their own cult followings as if they were real people. So what happens is the AI firms, they scrape creative content without compensation. They don't have to. They just put a picture and AI works on it to build on it, to gain rhythm, and then they can draw the guy or the woman. That's logical, and that is the way it's going to move forward. And as long as they're not using that specific copyright material publicly, because they can use it privately, it's legal. Now, new laws may come, and you're obviously going to get an activist judge who's going to look at it from the actors because he's an activist. I mean, we're seeing it with Trump, over 60 of them. And a lot of those have ties with daughters and sons and friends and relatives working for Democrat or leftist nonprofits. And yet they won't recuse themselves. But yet they'll, oh, I can rule on that. They're going to find somebody like that on the judgeship for this. But these artists, they fear economic and cultural devastation. They say, look, they're living on the high horse. Screw them. I'm sorry. That's how I feel. You know why I look forward to that day? We're not going to have to pay $30 for a movie. It'll be fun, once again, to go watch a movie for $10. $15, $20. It's just ironic. Oh, we hate Trump. We hate Trump. Save us. Okay, so let me get this right. I wrote this down. So using copyrighted material privately isn't inherently illegal in the U.S., but it depends on context. Personal use might be fair under the Copyright Act's four-factor test. Purpose, nature, amount, and marketing impact. They're saying that AI training without consent, even privately, could infringe if it harms creators. And that's what they're saying. This is harming us. This battle's going to be had. It's going to happen regardless. You don't think they're not going to be doing this in China? In other countries? And they're going to drop those films. They won't look like them. They're using these to kind of build and formulate. Right now, for news, media, whatever, they use that. They don't have to pay the fee for the copyrighted photo, etc. And that's one thing they're hating. But eventually, they're going to create just different people. They're going to have so much learning that they will have done off of this process that they won't even need that to create a real-looking human being who's much better looking than an actor, has personality. That's the key. The rundown number four, Disney Snow White Dwarf debacle. So I'm revisiting Snow White here. The source, thatparkplace.com, another great site for you conservatives. So Disney's live-action Snow White remake, that sparked outrage. And I'm bringing this up even though it's a little old, because a lot of people don't know it, because Zegler's kind of brushed it under the rug. But this is important, the hypocrisy of leftists who've made it. Dwarf actors are planning a protest outside Disney Studios because of their exclusion from the film. And those include Ally Chapman and her husband. They're furious at Disney for replacing the iconic Seven Dwarfs with CGI characters instead of casting real little people as they originally did. It robs them of rare Hollywood opportunities. And you know what? They're 100% correct. I don't care what you are and who you are. There's a time and place. Seven Dwarfs, I mean, they're seven little people thinking, oh my God, this could be my break. I could be the next Peter Dinklage. I could be the next Herb Villanova or you know, from the 70s and 80s. He was in James Bond movie, if you don't remember. I agree. It robbed them of a rare Hollywood opportunity. And why did this happen? Because of Peter Dinklage. Why are we doing this, man? This is backward. So what did they do? They ditched the real people and went to CGI to appease one man who is rich. I'll never watch another movie of his. I spit on him. Why? Because he cracked on his own people for his political career, his desires of how he sees himself. While knowing there are tens of thousands of little people who want their break, and he took that away from them. Damn that bigot, Peter Dinklage. God, I loathe people like him. Rundown number 5, Universal loses grip on Jason Bourne franchise, geeksandgamers.com. So Universal Pictures has lost the rights to the iconic Jason Bourne franchise and its greater Robert Ludlum library. So now there's a bidding war. They're shopping the franchise, Skydance, Apple, Netflix. They want to reboot the series, and they want to bring the guy back. It's been a decade since the 2016 film Jason Bourne. Universal's still in the running. If they can outbid. And Universal, you know, it screwed up because they just couldn't get the last movie going. And they waited too long. See, Jerry Bruckheimer and Steven Spielberg said this. You know, it's next impossible to greenlight a film. And that has cost Universal. Now, Matt Damon's done. He's too old to be playing the role. They want a fresh start. I don't blame him. No, you don't want a little guy. Yeah, I'm little, like Matt Damon. But you want an actual leading man, an actual guy who's actually tall, thick, and actually handsome. And again, Universal's stalled development of the 6th installment with director Edward Berger is what contributed to the right slipping away. The rundown number 6, John McTiernan's critique of Hollywood's decline. This happens at least once or twice a year from some older guy. So renowned director John McTiernan, he is renowned, Die Hard and Predator. He recently shared a scathing views on the current state of Hollywood. He argues that Hollywood has lost its creative edge. True, attributing the industry's downfall to a reliance on what he calls garbage, a modern comic book adaptation. No, McTiernan, you're garbage for saying that. You're just angry, jealous, petty, and showing your bigotry. You can have great tales based off of comics. It's just how it gets done. He thinks this reflects a broader disconnect from meaningful contemporary literature. Artsy-fartsy. Let me tell you something here, McTier penis. These movies, when they came out in the silent era, during the Depression era, it was meant to entertain. So people would forget about their lives. They could escape reality. We don't care about your artsy-fartsy unless it's a great story. There's a reason 10 zillion action movies have never been nominated for an Oscar Best Movie, and all these losers that have been in the red win it for Best Movie. Because all y'all talk about is artsy-fartsy because you're a self flagellating fools in Hollywood. Ooh, that smells so sweet, like unicorn farts. So he expresses this illusionment with the studio system. He claims it's become homogenized and predictable. True, but when you have these big tent movies, you can't screw up a hit, and they do. Why? Because they're woke like you. In fact, he had a legal battle and a prison sentence that left him blacklisted from the industry. I'm not sure what. Give me 1 second here. It's in my notes somewhere. Okay. I knew I had it here somewhere. So he's blacklisted after a wiring tapping scandal. And it involved producer Charles Roven. And it led to a felony conviction for lying to the FBI in a year-long prison sentence in 2013 to 2014. So it had to do with Rollerball, the movie. You know, it's, wow. Wow, yeah, what a moron. What a damn moron. So he was financially ruined from fines and bankruptcy, made him a liability, causing studios to distance themselves and effectively end his directing career. So he brought it on himself. Rude rundown, number 7. Meghan Markle's Netflix series faces criticism and viewership challenges. Y'all think? Source, that part place. So there's mixed reception and underwhelming performance of her show. It's a solo show with love, Meghan. So the series has been met with harsh, harsh reviews. Man, harsh. And they described it as gormless lifestyle filler. And then exercise and narcissism. ThatPartPlace.com is where I got all this. So it's disappointing. It's accusations of inauthenticity. Yes, it is. You're not in the full dress gear to cook or to work in the garden. She's trying to rebrand herself as a lifestyle guru. For those of you wondering, gormless is a British slang term, and it means lacking intelligence, sense, or initiative. describing someone or something as clueless or foolish. That's Megan. So the initial viewership numbers were significantly much lower than those when they were a couple doing the previous joint project, Harry and Meghan. There were only 526,000 households tuning in for the pilot episode compared to 2.1 million for the first go-round. People don't care about her. They care about Prince Harry, former Prince Harry, and their attachment and the dirt. They don't care about lifestyle from her. They know it's fake. In fact, they're saying some of the hate watchers are boosting the numbers. Here's the bottom line. Meghan Markle wants to be seen as the next Princess Di, the next Grace Kelly, women who were seen as nothing but pure majesty and elegance. And she's not. And that drives her nuts because that's what she wants to be seen as. Prince William's wife, I forget her name. I don't keep up with the royals. She's seen at that. You become a sore point in the social media, the page six pages, meaning the gossip celebrity, you're not going to get that respect or be seen as elegant, especially when you play the political game she has of hating on people publicly, being disgusting, being caught in lies of what she has said. Of course, you're not going to be seen like that, but that's what she dreams of, to be seen as Princess Di or Grace Kelly of Monaco. The real rundown number eight, the controversy surrounding Avowed's reported player numbers. So Avowed claimed 5.9 million players. There's skepticism over that versus the sales figures. PK Insight reported that it lacks substantiation from Microsoft. They think that's what it has. And most people assume, probably correctly, that it's Game Pass usage rather than actual sales. And they use players, not games. So it had a Steam peak of 20,000 concurrent players. Inflated marketing? I think so. It reached, quote, reached 5.9 million players, unquote. It's deliberately vague. It's done to inflate perceptions of success. And it's a tactic that PR firms do. The Acolyte did this too. And that is Star Wars on Disney Plus. Excuse me. Rundown number nine. Excuse me. Shifting parental perspectives on kids' gaming interests. Wow. So a recent survey, and this was at parents.com or a site like that. I'm sorry, I should have had that one down too. So a recent survey highlights how parents are increasingly embracing their children's gaming interests. They're citing benefits and potential career opportunities. The benefits they're lying, they see that as babysitters. But they do see potential career opportunities. One guy could be the next, those gaming contests. Man, those are the 1%, the 1%. And that was done by Prodigy Education. The survey of 1,000 American parents reveals a shift from negative stereotypes with parents now spending an average of 1,000 and up to 3,000 to support their kids' gaming ambitions. Oh, look, little fat little Joey. Oh, yeah, what's he going to be? You're going to be a gamer, bro. What else can he do? Nothing. He just sits on his couch, that fat ass. But he's a good gamer. They have no clue. It's driven by the promise of cognitive benefits like problem solving and strategic thinking. Games do not do that anymore unless there's consequences for that. Most games walk you through. And here's the downside. Gaming guides, 99% of kids use them when they're playing. So this is a little deceiving in what parents think versus what's actually happening. But there are career paths in this, but they're all limited. It's not like it's going to be there for everyone. So they're saying that, yeah, experts say, hey, gaming does foster skills such as improved cognition and social connections, but not social interactions in person. That I know for a fact. You can socialize and talk to a girl online, and then you meet her in person. That's what I see on a daily basis. Well, I used to see it on a daily basis. Now that I work from home, not as much. So you really do need moderation. You need to look at what they're playing. And if you really want that to happen, have them play cognitive type games. They're not always the big AAA games or double A games. Think, parents. Rude Rundown number 10. Jonathan Majors seeks Marvel Cinematic Universe return amid legal controversy. So, actor Jonathan Majors, who allegedly, I'm saying allegedly because I can't remember, beat the hell out of his woman, assault and harassment charges, he voiced hope to reprise his role as Kang the Conqueror. He wants the money. It's about fame and money. And he tried to draw comparisons to Robert Downey Jr. and Jeremy Renner. I don't know about Jeremy Renner. I don't care. Robert Downey Jr. is one we all know about. So comparing to Downey Jr. is BS. Downey had past struggles with drug addiction and subsequent recoveries that went up and down, up and down. I remember them taking a picture of him having to work at a car wash. One of the most embarrassing moments of his life, he said, but one that helped turn his life around. And he overcame it. He had years of rehabilitation. He had to prove his sobriety over and over and undergo many tests, screen tests for the Iron Man role. So this is so he's like, hey, I want back in. He hasn't suffered any penance, whether he should or shouldn't. I guess it's beside the point, but I'm saying he has no right to compare himself to what Robert Downey went through. Majors' situation lacks the same redemption arc, to give it a Marvel Cinematic storyline there, pointing out that Downey Jr. faced prison time. That's right, prison time. That car wash thing, I think, was part of his probation. Or he was working in a prison. Outside of prison, I can't remember. And he was blacklisted from Hollywood for years and years. Then he got lucky with his Marvel Cinematic Universe breakthrough. He worked hard to get to that point, but I mean, got lucky because at that point, it's we like you, we like you, we like you. It's not a test of who's better, it's who they prefer. Majors' legal issues remain unresolved. He brought Jeremy Renner up and Robert Downey Jr. up because they're white. He's played the race card before. And that's what I find even more disgusting. He doesn't get it. He's just using them as a, what's the term? He's using them as a, damn it, what is that term? He's using them as a straw man argument, meaning he's misrepresenting it or not being fully truthful, but he's using them to compare himself and it's not true. Resolve your issues first, brother. Fix your life. Stop beating on women, allegedly, because we don't know if that happened. He says it didn't, but I guess witnesses said it did. But we'll find out soon enough if we haven't already, and I just missed out on that. And then talk about getting back into Hollywood. And maybe start a little lower. And there you have it, my friends. The Rude Rundown. So, let's review. Assassin's Creed Shadows, don't buy it if you're a parent. You don't need your kid. That's your job to talk to your kid about the human sexuality that's all in there. Snow White, go woke, go broke. Snow White validates it. Captain America, Brave New World, being asked while you're trying to promote the film, woke aspects, go broke. Disney still refuses to learn. As I showed you with the Rude Rundown and Jimmy Kimmel of ABC. My friends, do not forget to like and share this podcast. And do not forget, you can find this podcast at grumblingsmedia.com. Bookmark it, along with my other conservative podcast, Fired Up California, All California Talk, and Fired Up Conservative Talk, All National Issues. As well as my points on the board, when politics and sports collide. I bring all this to you, and I love doing it. You can find these also at YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, e Pandora, under the profile Grumblings Media. So until next time, my friends, I ask of you to stay rude and stay cool. And I am William Del Pilar for the Red, White, and Rude. And until next week, I bid you adieu.